Hello, I'm Agneta. I know it's very hard for you to pronounce, but you can say Agneta or you can say Anna.
ABBA's Agneta Falskog is back after years out of the public eye with a new album.
Agneta takes to a stage and blows kisses to the crowd.
This is her first new material in 25 years.
It was great to hear that she was emerging from exile.
But where has she been and why is she back now?
It's good for her. It's good for us all.
Agneta's extraordinary singing career began when she was just 15 years old.
She's an ordinary, sweet girl who happens to have this talent. She can write music and that she can sing.
Within 2 years, she was a singing sensation at the top of the charts in Sweden. Then along came Bjorn and ABBA. The phenomenal group and living soap opera that has sold 375 million albums globally. Let me tell you now, my love is strong enough. She had the voice.
That's the sound of ABBA. I mean, that's it. Her voice is it.
And the looks.
I'm sexy and I know it.
As far as I know, she was never really trying to be sexy. She was just sexy.
But what was life like in ABBA for the girl thrust from rural Sweden to worldwide fame and a very public divorce?
That was some hard times, really.
She went solo in the 80s, but retreated from view in the 90s, exhausted by stardom.
It's always like a shock when you see your name in the tabloids.
Yet now, this most private of singers is back. And on the new album is a duet with Take That frontman Gary Barlow. In this film, we have exclusive access to their very first meeting.
I would love, love the opportunity to try and do this track live somewhere.
This is the complete story of one of pop's brightest, most loved, but reluctant of stars. Tune into my frequency, I
missed you for a long while. Agneta. ABBA and After. A baby Agneta.
Agneta was born on the 5th of April 1950, the first of two daughters to power company administrator Ingvar and his wife Birgit, who were both amateur musicians.
I was born in Jönköping. It's a little town in Sweden at a lake called Vättern, and I lived there for 18 years. My parents was very musical. My father was a showman. My mother could sing as well, so they often sat together and played and sing. So I got a lot from them, and they bought me a piano.
Agneta's home recording.
So I can remember I was around 5 years old when I realized that I could compose.
Agneta decided at an early age she was going to be a singer-songwriter.
That was my highest dream. And I listened a lot to music, to singers like Connie Francis, all these singers that were during the 60s. Don't break the heart that loves you. Handle it with care. It was like hurt in her voice, and she was singing with harmonies on, so she doubled her own voice, and I really liked that, and I knew that I could do that as well. You know I'm So I sat in the front of the mirror and I mimed to her songs, and that went on for many years. La, 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 la,
la. The years of mirror miming paid off when, in 1965, Agneta quit school, got herself an office job, and led a double life, as a singer at night in the Bernd Enghardt dance band, aged just 15. When Agneta collapsed from exhaustion at work one day, her mother gave her an ultimatum.
Either you go on working in the office or you choose the music. And that was not a difficult choice for me to do, so I chose the music.
The dance band was hugely popular and was playing every night. The next step was to get themselves a record deal.
One member in the dance orchestra knew a rock legend in Sweden called Lil Gerard. I walk camping forever and the gramophone started to play.
Kind of us like the star made my cousin sweat. Little Gerhard was a rock and roll singer in the 50s, often called the Swedish Elvis. In the 60s, he was working as a talent scout for Kupol Records in Stockholm. In 1967, the band had sent him a demo tape, including a ballad written and sung by Agneta.
And then he called back and said, "Who's the singer?" And that was when it all started.
Agneta. Yeah. Yeah, I have a tape of you here. And I like it very much. I said to the producer, "Have you heard something like that before?" She said, "No, she has a clear voice. A sad voice." I call her up and say, "Can you come to Stockholm?" She said, "Do I have to?" She said, "Yes, you must come to Stockholm."
So we went up to Stockholm by train. And I held my father's hand, and I felt secure.
Gerhard had already recorded orchestral backing tracks of two of Agneta's songs, ready to add her vocals.
And we went out to the studio, and when they played the background for her, you know, she said, "Oh my God, have I done that?" I said, "Yeah, it's your tune."
We went down the stairs, and I could hear my own song. And with the strings on, that was a great moment for me. They asked me, can you do a harmony on that melody? And that was really no problem for me. I knew already how it was going to be, so. I remember when they played it first on the radio, and that was such a fantastic moment because I was still living in that little town.
Björn.
I remember hearing Agneta's first single on the radio.
She did a couple sort of back-to-back, both good songs. She wrote some good stuff, you know. Singing in harmony with herself.
There was something so special with that voice. And the fact that she had written that song herself, it was magic.
The song went to number 3 in the Swedish charts, and Agneta released more singles and an album in quick succession. At one point, she even knocked the Beatles off the top of the charts, just as the British invasion was gathering speed in Europe. By 1968, she was a regular sight on Swedish TV and looked set for a long career in music.
I composed a lot of songs then, and it was always fantastic when it climbed in the charts.
So at 18, Agneta moved to Stockholm and was a young adult in a society that, to Britain, was a free-thinking world of wonder.
These are the richest people in the world, where everything and everyone works. The only country in the world where 7-year-olds attend lessons on sex. This could only be Sweden.
It was also a time when the political and musical landscape was changing. As the young protested about war, much of the music scene joined in and rebelled against commercial pop, embracing so-called progressive folk with a socialist message.
Oh, yeah.
But Bjørn Ulvaeus and his band, the Hootenanny Singers, remained firmly in the pop mainstream. They did catchy ballads in Swedish and English, influenced by American pop folk acts of the mid-60s. The band had a huge following across Scandinavia. Baby, those are the rules. Baby, those are the rules. In the close-knit world of Swedish music, it was inevitable that Bjorn and Agneta would meet.
We did a TV show together, and she and I had a duet together.
Agneta joins Bjorn on a boat.
So we sat and talked, and then we could both feel something.
so that was, you know, magical moment.
And then the next day when we should film, it was very cold outside, like it is in Sweden most of the time. And he said, I can warm you. I can warm you up. Yes, please, I said. So that's how it all started.
That evening, I think, is when it actually happened. We fell in love. And then shortly after that, we were a couple.
And in 1971, they were married. With both Agneta and Bjorn already pop royalty in Sweden, the wedding was a public event.
We didn't get married here in Stockholm. It was down in south of Sweden. We chose the place. So, but that was crowded, really. So that was a fantastic moment.
Images of the happy couple at their wedding.
Bjorn's best friend and songwriting partner, Benny Andersson, played the organ at the wedding. Since 1965, he'd been a teen idol as the keyboard player in the pop band Hep Stars. Benny's fiancée, Anna Frid, was also a singer.
Anna Frid Lyngstad.
She'd won a national talent competition in 1967, which led to this early TV appearance.
Det var en ledig dag, så fylld av välbehag.
The two couples, now seasoned pop professionals, would often go on holidays together and inevitably sing a few songs, but only for fun.
There we were, the four of us, and not having a single thought about starting a group together. No, that was far from our minds, you know.
But the four did eventually hook up to combine their talents on, of all things, a cabaret tour.
We had this terrible experience. We did a show together, the four of us.
An absolutely the stupidest idea ever.
We did a show in Gothenburg, and then we were called Festfolket.
Festfolket, or party people, with dull jokes and other people's songs, was an inauspicious beginning for the foursome.
And it was dreadful. Absolutely dreadful.
But we had a little piece in the middle of that show where we played songs that we wrote.
Benny and I had recorded a single together where the girls sang in the choruses. And they sort of took over because it sounded much better with them. And that hit, while we were on that tour with the cabaret act, that hit suddenly struck. And we had a number one with that. Hey, gamle man, kan du visa oss den väg som vi ska gå? If you listen to that, you would not hear the ABBA of the future.
But despite this success, they all decided to continue to focus on their existing careers, and Agneta recorded her fourth solo album. Vi ska hitta egna små ställen
många gånger än. But also I did other things as well. I played, for example, Maria Magdalena in Jesus Christ Superstar.
A
but she made a record. She came out with a single of I Don't Know How to Love Him in Swedish, and that was very good. And so you could tell from that record what a great singer she was.
After Agneta's four successful months in Jesus Christ Superstar in the summer of 72, Bjorn and Benny had an audacious plan to leap from the backwater that was Scandinavia to the vast ocean of pop.
Why don't we do a single in English, a pop song? That's what we should do.
Why don't we do what we really like and try to write pop songs? And maybe we should ask Frida and Agneta to sing them.
And so that's what we did. With a song called People Need Love.
People need hope, people need loving, people need trust from a fellow man. People need love to make a good living, people need faith in a helping hand.
That became a hit here, little in Holland, little in Germany, so we felt that we were on the right track.
Fest Folket was no more. The group had now changed its name to the somewhat less catchy Bjorn and Benny, Agneta and Anna Frid.
We had a big hit in Sweden and some other countries by Ring Ring.
I was sitting by the phone. I was waiting all alone.
After these homegrown hits, the group's manager, Stig Andersson, decided the way to get them noticed outside of Sweden was Eurovision, and Ring Ring was entered into the preliminary selection rounds.
That's why we entered the Eurovision, to make people outside Sweden aware of that there was a band from Sweden who could record some decent music.
But then I was highly pregnant. 73, so we got our daughter then.
Linda was born that February, just when her parents' group were on the brink of success.
So everything happened for me between 20 and 30 years.
But luckily for young mother Agneta, the song didn't get selected and she had a well-earned rest. Meanwhile, the boys plotted the group's entry for the following year's Eurovision. Rechristened ABBA, they had a killer look and killer material.
We had a song that wasn't the usual Eurovision stuff.
Waterloo by ABBA for Sweden. Watch this one.
After years of hard graft in the School of Pop, ABBA were about to graduate.
Gary Barlow.
From a show that's always been not really taken seriously, when that song came on, I think it took the whole show and the expectation of the songs in the show to a whole new level.
Waterloo, I was defeating you on the wall. Waterloo, promise to love you forevermore.
I had a funny star-shaped guitar. People would remember us, I thought, you know.
You know, they dressed up in their funny outfits, but in 1974, they didn't seem quite so funny as they might now.
No, but they were tight. They were really tight.
I don't think any one of us thought that we would win the competition.
Well, I bet £100 on it. I did. Good odds. I think I had like 12 times the money or so.
Of course, I thought maybe we were going to be number three.
How about that for an on-stage performance? Sweden, they've never won it, but they've surely got to be up amongst the reckoning with that one.
But of course, they did win, and our love affair with them began.
Oh, that was a great moment, really.
I think it was pretty obvious that it was the best song and it was the best performance. And I think we reacted quite well to it. They came over, they performed the song on Top of the Pops, and I think we really warmed to them. And we took them to our hearts, really.
We took them to our hearts because ABBA fitted exactly into what was going on in Britain at the time. The Sweet, T-Rex, Sequins and Sex. In other words, ABBA was glam.
They're ABBA, and their song that everyone wants to hear at the moment is at number one.
If you change your mind, take a chance, I'm the first in line, honey, I'm still free, take a chance on me.
ABBA were an instant hit in the UK, but not everyone loved them.
It's a bit like the Bee Gees, who were also brilliant. the intellectual side of the pop business took quite a while to accept them.
It was almost like Benny and Bjorn, the hook could never be big enough. Okay, just as we've got it enormous, let's add another level to it. It's like they were never satisfied with how big this thing could be. Knowing me, knowing you, there is nothing we can do. Knowing me, knowing you.
Knowing Me, Knowing You was the first of what would become ABBA's trademark, the breakup song, wrapped in glossy production with videos that presented the group as an unfolding drama.
Even when the lyrics are negative, it's actually a very positive sound. And pop music really at its best. Knowing me, knowing you.
There is nothing we can do. Knowing me, knowing. Despite her early success with her own songs, Agneta left the songwriting duties in ABBA to Bjorn and Benny.
All through our time with ABBA, Benny and I wanted Agneta to write much more than she did. Like the first two albums, she wrote a song for each album?
I did one song, it's called Disillusion. Changing, moving
in a circle. Because she has written so many fantastic songs and we wanted her, please, why don't you come up with a couple of songs for this album?
Maybe she felt like a bit intimidated by us.
There was a time when I felt, how can I compose with these guys? So I felt I had to take a step back. But they have always wanted me to compose. But I felt that they are not good enough, you know.
Benny and Bjorn may have written the hits, but it was Agnetha's delivery of them that made her contribution to ABBA clear.
It's really all about the lead vocal. You can put great drums, guitarists, whatever, but if that lead vocal isn't amazing, it just doesn't connect with people. And so that sound that I've heard all my life, that we've heard on the radio for all our lives, the sound of three or four generations, really, that's how important her voice was to those records. Where are those happy days? They seem
so hard to find. Very emotional. She's amazing in interpreting emotions.
Jørgen Elofsson, songwriter and producer. I wish I understood.
It used to be so nice, it used to be so good. It's like a film role. It's just that at the moment you sing, it's nothing else. It's just like being in a bubble. When you're gone, how can I even try to go on? I'm a very much feeling person. So I try to put everything in the song at the time.
The lead vocal duties were split pretty evenly between Agneta and Frida, but each had their own unique style.
Mine maybe stood out as well because I had the highest.
There might have been songs, you know, that we had one of them in mind when writing it.
That was the boys' choice. So they really knew that before, that this is the song for you and this is a song for Frida.
But mostly, it was a matter of you know, Agneta has got two songs now. It's my turn, isn't it? Can you hear the drums, Fernando?
I remember long ago another starry night. It has been so much written that we were not friends, and of course there were a lot of irritations, because we were tired and so, but we also helped each other, so.
But the good thing is when they were singing together.
When you put these two voices together, you reach a lot.
They were great singing together, but they were also contrasting voices and contrasting images.
that's so much part of the secret. Why am I still here today? Why I am being interviewed by you today?
When we recorded Dancing Queen, both Frida and I could feel something very, very special because we had those goosebumps. And we said, this is strong. Baby, baby, you're
right outside. Dancing Queen recording session, 1975. When you come to the party, listen to the guys,
they got the look in their eyes. What I'd like to do, really, is just ask you to publicly tell us your favourite ABBA tunes.
I would like to choose Dancing Queen. Mm-hmm. But I remember recording that backing track. I really felt something very strongly for it, you know.
Onni Frid Lyngstad, interviewed in 1982.
We just pushed everything the best we could. And I think that we got a lot of energy from each other. So we had a funny time there, really building it all up. And I really enjoy being in the studio, so for me there was not working, there was just fun, I think.
We all started to know where are the limits, how far can we go, how high can you sing, how low can you sing, where can we put this so it sounds as its best. You know?
It sounds effortless when you listen to a piece of ABBA's music, but actually it's very complex what's going on in there. So as a singer, I'd particularly always avoid ABBA songs because they're actually so hard to sing.
With Dancing Queen, ABBA surfed the wave of disco fever that would soon engulf the world in the late 70s. It was number one in 9 countries in 1976, and the album Arrival saw them reach their peak of commercial success.
They produced hit after hit after hit. Money, money,
money. By the next year, it seemed the whole world had gone ABBA mad, particularly in Australia, where they seemed to mirror what the country thought of itself. Optimistic, beautiful, yet conservative.
Well, they were always dressed nicely.
Well, I like the clean-cut beat of the music.
The ABBA mania storm was gathering, and Agneta was caught in the middle of it.
We didn't expect that we were that big and that so many people should be there.
So it was a big what when we came there.
Inge-Marie Halling.
It affects you when it gets too much. And I could feel that when we were in Australia sometimes. Because it was really a fever.
Crowds of screaming fans.
And going into the concerts when we drove by the cars, and people were just throwing themselves on the car, and there were small kids being there. We were so scared that one car should drive over someone. So there was tense moments. Money, money,
money. So many people aiming at you, focusing on you, what you say, where you go.
The crowds may have been scary, but it was the stage itself that frightened Agneta the most. More at home in the studio, she was never a natural performer.
Frida was more at home on stage than Agneta was. She wasn't quite relaxed, but she was kind of frightened to go on stage every now and then.
I had some difficulties going on stage because I think you're very focused, you're very nervous.
I wasn't too keen on being on stage myself, so I completely understand her.
The time before, it's a bit scary, I think.
I can remember the feeling of the crowd shouting and the girls going on stage in their gold capes.
If she might have been frightened going on stage, once she was there, of course, there was all this warmth, all this fantastic response coming from the audience, and that makes you forget.
I enjoyed it being on the stage after maybe half an hour or something like that.
She's very good at understatement, which is something that
I always like in an artist. She doesn't sort of go berserk. But so a little movement from Agnetta is often worth a bigger gesture from another sort of artist.
She does a dance, pointing her fingers up in the air.
I was perfectly happy sitting by the piano just playing along and letting the women do the work, which they actually did. They were the face. We were just there playing along, Björn and I.
It was never obvious to the audience what a reluctant star Agnetha was, but she often got more attention for her looks.
I'm sexy and I know it.
I think Agnetha was always thought of as a sex symbol by certainly all ABBA fans.
I'm sexy and I know it.
She was the main eye candy of the band.
Lola Murray.
In Sweden, all men thought she was a very sexy girl. I think a lot of men dreamt about her.
The world was thinking it, but it took the brash Australians to come out with it.
I read somewhere where you are the proud owner of an award which declares you as the lady with the most sexiest bottom. Is that true?
How can I answer to that? I don't know. I haven't seen it.
I'm sexy and I know it.
To start with, I wasn't so much aware of it. But then when the papers said something, we joked about it a lot.
Agnetha's bottom tops show.
Oh, my God. Don't they have bottoms in Australia? At least I did something for the show, didn't I?
And then I thought, maybe I can take advantage of this and just play a little, you know. Wiggle, 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 wiggle,
yeah. Wiggle, 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 yeah. As far as I know, she was never really trying to be sexy. She was just sexy.
But offstage, the relentless touring schedule was taking its toll on Agnetha. And when new baby Christian arrived, she wanted to start spending more time at home.
I had my little daughter at home and then my two children, so I felt often that I want to spend my life with them.
At the time, you know, I might have been irritated sometimes that we could do more things than we actually did. To be together with your child, compare that to doing promotion in Stuttgart. In retrospect, what is the best? Oh, it's easy, isn't it?
In October 1978, Benny and Frida were finally married nearly 10 years after they first met. But a few months later, it was announced that Agnetha and Björn would be ending their 10-year marriage.
That was some hard times, really.
There was endless speculation in the press as to what caused the split.
The fact that we were separating was ever so much worse than what the press wrote. You know, that's the way we saw it.
But there are always some kind of rumors and things going on that it doesn't feel so good.
Despite the rift between the couple, it was decided that ABBA should continue, as they were just hitting it big in America.
I've waited my entire life to see this group. I mean, the day I heard Waterloo, I totally flipped out.
But the huge 1979 world tour proved to be a miserable one for Agnetha, who had to hide the pain in her personal life and keep smiling on stage.
They grabbed something from the backbone to use and to make it a professional performance anyway.
One bright spot on the tour was when Agnetha and Björn's then 6-year-old daughter, Linda, joined them on stage in Las Vegas for her singing debut. The next year, Björn presented a song to the group that everyone assumes was about their divorce. The breakup song that ABBA had long made their own had come true, and life had become art. Or was it vice versa?
I presented the lyric, and everyone was sort of slightly, you know, teary-eyed.
It was very moving. It was a challenge for me at the same time to do this because it was so real.
And then she started singing, and my God, that was magic. So fantastic.
I don't want to talk about things we've gone through, though it's hurting me. Now it's history. I played all my cards, and that's what you've done too. Nothing more to say, no more ace to play. The winner takes it all, the loser standing small.
It's not like the winner takes it all. That's not how it happens. In a situation like that, I think everyone's a loser.
There was not one winner in the case of us. So it's pure fiction.
You don't know what he was writing about. Who was he writing about? It could be 50% from him and 50% from me, the lyrics. I mean, what it's all about.
But going through a divorce is difficult, as anyone would know who's done it. And it makes you think about it. It's like a failure. It's difficult, and maybe that was one way of getting it out of my system. It was like, you know, to write a lyric like that and have her sing it. It was like, you know, cleansing in a way. We got it out in a big way.
I don't want to talk if it makes you feel sad, and I understand you've come to shake my hand. I apologize if it makes you feel bad, seeing me so tense, no self-confidence. But you see, the winner takes it all.
Yeah, it was powerful, you know. It's a good song, one of our best, I think.
Sometimes it happens when I have bad self-confidence that I put on The Winner Takes It All or something else that we are very proud of. And I can think that this is really something. I did this at least.
In 1981, Benny and Frida were divorced too after just 2.5 years of marriage. But again, the group continued and were determined not to let the cracks show in public.
That's the way it is.
But when ABBA went into the studio to record what would be their last album, The Visitors, everyone felt that the spark had gone.
It suddenly had got a bit heavy. It was not so fun anymore to record, and it was something in the atmosphere that didn't feel good.
Rumors started to circulate in the press that ABBA were about to call it a day, but the group were saying nothing.
The papers recently have been full of stories that you're going to split eventually. You're not. No. Well, they're obviously relieved to hear it. I was just going to ask you if that ever occurred to you, and who would make the decision? I mean, would it be a joint decision?
It would, yes. Yeah. We would.
It was gradual. And it began that year, 82. And we felt that we're not having as much fun anymore.
ABBA.
Just a month later, ABBA were back on Noel's Late Late Breakfast Show, performing on what would be their last ever TV appearance.
Don't know how to take it, don't know where to go.
There was never any formal announcement of a split. Agneta, Bjorn, Benny and Frida just quietly went their separate ways.
it just stopped very natural.
Fantastic, the way we organically sort of came together gradually, and then it happened, and then it stopped. Just the way it should be.
We were very, very tired after the ABBA years. And we just felt, I think, all of us, but at least Frida and me was just, we didn't want to hear the music no more.
In 1983, Agneta started considering her post-ABBA career.
Once you are in the music business, it's hard to get away from it because it's so fun when you record, I think. So I started to aim for doing another record by myself. Temperature is rising to fever pitch. Sun is getting closer, we all get rich because the heat is on. Heat is on.
Agneta Falz-Karga, quarter of ABBA, the heat is on. Welcome to Britain.
Thank you very much.
You're here to promote the record, and there's an album coming out later in the month, which is called...
Yeah, the album comes the last of May, and it's called Wrap Your Arms Around Me.
I might. But tell me.
The album was a hit in Europe, selling over 2 million copies, and the single The Heat Is On made the top 40 in Britain. Agneta did two more solo albums in English, but neither made an impact in the UK.
It may be a naive question, but with all the success, the enormous money that ABBA made and all the rest of it, one would have imagined that you would have bought yourself the little house on the fjord and just
well,
retired.
Well, I have.
Well, you have.
Yeah, but anyway, it hasn't got to do with the money. Because if you have something inside, it, well, it's there. And it's nice to do something, and when a challenge comes up, it's nice to do it.
Despite her pre-ABBA success as a songwriter, Agneta only wrote two songs over these three albums.
You get spoiled having good songs to sing, and all of a sudden you have almost good songs to sing.
There are some songs here and there that I can think that, why did we do this one? So, but you don't think that way when you're in it.
Even though the albums had been hits in Sweden and elsewhere in Europe, after 20 years in the limelight, Agneta decided to retreat to her island home just outside of Stockholm.
I thought I have to have a little break now, and I've done so much. I want to be with my children and in my home and with the horses and with my dogs. So there were some years I didn't do so much.
Often artists, particularly those who've been in incredible spotlights, they have a moment when they want to get away and they sort of don't want to do anything. I can fully sympathise with that.
She had enough and she wanted a normal life.
But the media weren't content to let Agneta have her privacy. And in the absence of any news about her, they simply made it up.
I have read so many things about myself that really are not true. And it makes you sad. And it's hard to take. They need to write about people, and the more you're not seeing and the more you get away, the more interesting maybe you are. But that was never my meaning of this. So it just worked that way for me.
The media has tried to create something about Agneta, sort of being a Greta Garbo type of person, hiding away from everything, which is totally bullshit.
One time she couldn't go out, and the media made her Greta Garbo, but she's not. She just wants to be alone.
Erasure, 1992.
Agneta's self-imposed period of exile in the 90s coincided with a resurgence of interest in ABBA's music.
I was very glad in the 90s when it suddenly became cool to like ABBA, and all those people cottoned onto it and jumped on the bandwagon. I always liked them.
The real revival, in a way, came with Mamma Mia, which brought their music to a huge new level.
But when Agneta failed to attend the London premiere of Mamma Mia in 1999, the press again labelled her a recluse.
If Benny doesn't want to go to something, he say, no, thank you, and don't. But as soon as she doesn't, it's a big rumble.
I lost my parents as well, so I got into a little, so to say, deep period.
Around this vulnerable time, an obsessive Dutch fan found his way into Agneta's life, stirring the tabloids into a frenzy of speculation.
And it makes you sad, and it's hard to take. It's always like a shock when you see your name in the tabloids with dark letters, big.
In reflective mood, in 2003, Agneta recorded My Colouring Book, a collection of melancholy cover songs remembered from her adolescence.
I would bring you flowers in the morning, wild roses when the sun begins to shine.
After a while, I felt, maybe after some years, that this is maybe a little heavy in a way, but maybe that was the way I felt. But I still think it's a very, very good album.
Although the record was critically acclaimed, Agneta effectively retired from music and didn't intend to record again.
Then the years moves on. But I mean, it's happening so much in your private life sometimes. So then I'm not thinking of working.
Britney Spears.
Then the man who wrote this and the man who arranged this were looking for a new project to work on together in 2011.
And we actually had the same dream to work with Agneta.
Agneta Fältskog, yeah. We got to do that. And at the same time we felt, oh no, it's a mission impossible.
A friend of ours called me and she said that these guys, which I heard of, want to meet you and play you some songs. And I thought, well, I give it a listen, and because I haven't closed any doors.
And she got back and, yeah, she's open for it, and I think maybe she's interested in doing something again. But you can't see her now because she just bought a dog, a puppy. And this was May, like 2 years ago. So we had to wait like 3 months to see her.
When Jörgen and Peter finally did get to talk about their project with Agneta, they came well prepared.
We really wanted to get to know her. We talked a lot about music, but, you know, life in general and stuff. And then she suddenly said, you know, well, aren't we going to hear some music? You know, and then I sort of just, whoop, well, I got the CD here, so.
They played me 3 songs. And after that, I felt that I can't say no to this. I have to do this.
The sessions began at Jörgen's home studio towards the end of 2011. But as Agneta hadn't sung for nearly a decade, nobody was sure how she'd sound.
If my voice sounds old, I don't want to do it.
And of course we said, but you know, if you don't have it and your voice sounds old, we don't want to do it either. So it's because we felt we don't want to make an album with Agneta Fältskog only because she's Agneta Fältskog.
Hey, alla mig.
Ja då.
Never. Hey ho.
Hey ho. Here we go.
Agneta's behind the mic at last.
Everything I ever had, I let it slip away.
Agneta said, you know, she came out in the kitchen and my wife asked her, so how did it go? It was terrible. And I know. And then I came. It was great. You know, so we were quite far away from each other. But I just knew it was going to be fantastic.
A bit tensed, but also very, very nice to sing again.
Jag ska hålla på över för...
Ja, för acting.
Ja.
She needed a little work along the way, sort of to get her muscles going, and we helped her a bit with that as well.
So that's why I decided I have to take some singing lessons just to remind myself how I'm going to do this.
I asked her to pick the song you gravitate most towards, and let's try that one.
The One Who Loves You Now.
Dream I ever dreamed was lost until today.
think the voice is nearly the same. Strange. I think it has fallen down maybe one tone, but also got wider.
It's slightly lower now, but it's got a lot of feeling and expression. So yes, it's as good, but in a different way. I think they've dealt with that really well on this record. That she is, the voice is more mature. And she's not up there, you know, at the sort of as far as she can go all the time, like she was with ABBA. Be the one who loves you
now. Agneta gives a thumbs up.
Good, guys. That was really good.
As I, you know, learned to getting to know her, I got more information. I kind of figured out who she was and what she would like to sing about now, finding the right lyrics that could suit a sort of a very mature woman, you know, rather than a young girl.
Now when I know her, I mean, it looks like she is in a bubble, you know, in a way. Sometimes she lets, you know, myself and Jürgen and other people into that bubble.
She's stretching it a bit on that song. She's, you know, trying a different territory, a bit more jazz, a bit more, it's a darker thing, you know, she hasn't done before.
And I could feel that this suits me very well. I feel very comfortable with singing this. In this bubble made
for two. Agneta's eyes are closed as she finishes the song.
We wanted to have a duet on this record, and so we started early on to talk about, you know, possible partners.
Many names came up, actually, and she was very clear of what she liked and didn't like.
During this process, I had one name in the back of my mind all the time, and it's Gary Barlow.
Gary and Jürgen had written songs together before and had been friends for years.
When he called me about 18 months ago and asked would I work on something with him, instantly, definitely, whatever it is, I'll be there. And then he told me what it was.
It was like so quick, I couldn't even, you know, ask the question until he said yes. It was like a nanosecond.
But I thought, what fun to work with such an incredible legend and work with my friend Jürgen. It's, what a horrible way of spending a day.
Gary came out to Stockholm to write the song with Jürgen, but Agneta was unexpectedly away for the recording.
I sang on it and I left Stockholm that night, not knowing if Agneta was going to like it, he was going to play it the next day.
When I come back, I heard his voice and I thought, how am I going to match this?
I can't believe it's really you.
You still look the way you used to.
I really love this voice, so I think it's fantastic to sing with him. Dance the dust, never quite settles, busy feet, remember still the way we moved, close in the darkness, all the music, the magic, the thrill.
Jürgen flew to London and he played me the finished result. I was absolutely thrilled.
I hope I have the chance to meet him now when I get to London. I should have followed
you home. Given that the song is about friends reuniting, it was fitting that when Agneta came to London to promote the album, the two finally did meet.
Okay.
I'm not really happy you're here filming this. I actually wanted this to be something I did on my own, but you're here anyway, so do you want to come in? This is it, the big meet. Hello.
Hello.
How are you? Nice to meet you.
At last.
I know, at last. Oh. Yeah, how are you?
I'm so pleased to meet you.
It was very chilling for me when I first heard our duet and your voice was singing my song after all the years I'd studied ABBA's music. So it's really special.
I think that was a perfect match, actually. I think that the song, but these two together, it's brilliant, actually. It's fantastic.
One thing I'm really intrigued with is that how from today can I talk you into, and this may be a long thing, this may not be decided today, maybe over the next few months.
Oh.
But I would love the opportunity to try and do this track live somewhere.
What was that? The surprise of the day?
No, I've just come. Nobody knew. I listen.
But now the whole.
I prepared for no. I'm prepared for no. Okay. But I would love you just to keep the door open to that. To maybe.
Okay. Can I think it over?
Think it over. Absolutely. But I think it would be unbelievable. I really do. I mean, I think it would be unbelievable to see you sing live by yourself.
Oh, yeah.
But I can take the credit with you. I'm happy. No, I'm happy to do that.
You know, that's not my strong point.
The live, really?
No.
For her to go on stage today, I don't know if she would ever do that, you know. I don't think she feels like she have to, you know. I think she's super happy in the studio.
Think it over.
During the day.
Just today? No, take a week. Take a month.
Oh, this
is
great.
I think there's a lot of people who would love it.
I think so,
too. But consider it.
I think so, too.
And take a week. No, take 6 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, you should never say never. Who thought that Agnetha Fältskog, you know, ever would record again? And not many, actually.
This album is beyond doubt going to reach a lot of people, not just old ABBA fans. When you love someone.
I think this doing this record gave her a lot of good vibes and good feelings for the future.
It's great that also she's kind of not open up, but kind of show the world actually maybe a bit more who she is, and not only person that's sort of hiding.
Peter and I were always sort of, okay, Agnetha, when are we starting the next one? You know, because we obviously want to make more music with her because it's been so much fun.
Right now I'm just so focused and proud of this record, so I want to stay with that feeling for the moment.
I think the response is amazing. I think people are behind her. And yeah, we just all want to hear her sing. When you really love
someone. A montage of images from Agnetha's time with ABBA, performing on stage, singing with a young girl, and waving to fans.